Jaya Srila Haridas Thakur ki prem se gaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Radhar Srivasadi Gaur of Bhakta Vrinda ki Shri Radha Krishna Gaur Gopavina Shyam Kunda Radha Kunigiri Govardhan ki Shri Vrindavan Dham ki Shri Mayapur Dham ki Ganga Mai ki Jamuna Mai ki Bhakti Devi ki Tulasi Devi ki Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda ki Jainata Gaur Prem Vrinda All glorious to some of All glories to some devotees. All glories to some devotees. All glories to Shri Guru and Shri Gauranga. All glories to Shri Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Bhagavad Gita, Chapter 2, Text 70. Apuryamanam.
Apuryamanam.
Achala.
Achala.
Pratishtam,
Pratishtam
Samudram,
Samudram
Apa,
Apa
Ravishanti,
Ravishanti
Yadvat,
Yadvat
Tadvat,
Tadvat
Kama,
Kama
Yam,
Yam
Ravishanti,
Ravishanti
Sarve,
Sarve
Sashantim,
Sashantim
Apnoti,
Apnoti
Nakama,
Nakama
Kami,
Kami
Apuryamanam achala pratishtam
Apuryamanam achala pratishtam
Samudramapav pravishanti yadvat
Samudramapav pravishanti yadvat
Tadvat kamayam pravishanti sarve
Tadvat kamayam pravishanti sarve
Shashanti mapnoti nakama kami
Shashanti mapnoti nakama kami
Apuryamanam,
Apuryamanam,
always filled.
Always filled.
Achala pratishtam,
Achala pratishtam,
steadily situated.
Steadily situated.
Samudram,
Samudram,
the ocean.
The ocean.
Apa,
Apa,
water.
Water.
Pravishanti,
Pravishanti,
enter.
Enter.
Yadvat,
Yadvat,
as.
As.
Tadvat,
Tadvat
so,
so
Kama,
Kama
desires,
desires
Yam,
Yam
unto one Ravishanti enter Sarve,
Sarve
all
Sa,
Sa
that person
Shantim,
Shantim
peace,
peace.
Avnoti achieves
Na,
Na not
Na.
Kama
Kami,
one who desires to fulfill desires. Translation. A person who is not disturbed by the incessant flow of desires that enter like rivers into the ocean, which is ever being filled but is always still, can alone achieve peace, not the man who strives to satisfy such desires. Purport. Although the vast ocean is always filled with water, it is always, especially during the rainy season, being filled with much more water. But the ocean remains the same, steady. It is not agitated, nor does it cross beyond the limit's brink. That is also true of a person fixed in Krishna consciousness. As long as one has the material body, the demands of the body for sense gratification will continue. The devotee, however, is not disturbed by such desires because of his fullness. A Krishna-conscious man is not in need of anything because the Lord fulfills all his material necessities. Therefore, he is like the ocean, always full in himself. Desires may come to him like the waters of the rivers that flow into the ocean, but he is steady in his activities, and he is not even slightly disturbed by desires for sense gratification. That is the proof of a Krishna-conscious man. One who has lost all inclinations for material sense gratification, although the desires are present. Because he remains satisfied in the transcendental loving service of the Lord, He can remain steady like the ocean and therefore enjoy full peace. Others, however, who fulfill desires up to the limit of liberation, what to speak of material success, never obtain peace. The fruit of workers, the salvationists, and also the yogis who are after mystic powers are all unhappy because of unfulfilled desires. But the person in Krishna consciousness is happy in the service of the Lord, and he has no desires to be fulfilled. In fact, he does not even desire liberation from the so-called material bondage. The devotees of Krishna have no material desires, and therefore they are in perfect peace. So Arjuna is in anxiety because he has desires to fulfill. And wanting to fulfill these desires, which never can actually be fulfilled, he is become unpeaceful. His mind is very disturbed. He cannot sit properly, he cannot stand, he cannot do anything properly. So disturbed he is. So now Krishna is pointing out that he wants satisfaction of the mind, naturally. He is wanting to do something. It's not working the way he wants. And his mind is disturbed. And naturally, then, he wants peace. He's thinking, I will go beg, or I will sit here on the chariot. I will do something in this way. I will make myself composed. So Krishna is pointing out here that he can never become composed unless he takes up Krishna consciousness, unless he controls the senses. Previous verses, then, Krishna has pointed out that only by control of the senses can one become peaceful. And that control of the senses can only be had if there is Krishna consciousness. If we are conscious of Krishna, then the senses become engaged in Krishna's service, so then they become controlled. So he must become Krishna conscious. And then here, Krishna is pointing out that it's not that these desires will go away. This is the jnani's idea. Jnani is, desires give me trouble, so therefore I will get rid of desires. It's a simple process. If the desire itself is giving me trouble, I get rid of the desires, then no trouble. So when the desires are then gotten rid of, then we'll be peaceful. But unfortunately, this doesn't work. It doesn't work in the material world. It also doesn't work in Brahman. So the difficulty here, what Krishna is pointing out is by control of the senses, by being conscious, then you'll be peaceful. So now he's taking in another step to point out that the desires don't go away. This is generally we are thinking. Like the other day a question came up, why is it as we advance more in devotional service, our desires seem to increase, we seem to get more? In the beginning, we come and they go away. And then after a while, we see that there's more and more desires, so many desires are there. So what's happening is not that there's some problem in Krishna consciousness, not that there is some problem necessarily in our following of Krishna consciousness. Of course, we have to be careful that we're not committing offenses or, in this way increasing desires. But as we become more Krishna conscious means we're becoming conscious. Prabhupada says, first become conscious, then become Krishna conscious. Right? You're not going to become Krishna conscious if you're not conscious. Right? So the ultimate consciousness is consciousness of Krishna. We're conscious of what is our surroundings, who we are, our surroundings, and that Krishna is in control of all this. He's in control of our surroundings. He's in control of us. So in this way, becoming conscious then means then we are able to be Krishna conscious. And factually, we'll only become conscious when we become Krishna conscious. As we become Krishna conscious, that's how our consciousness will come. So we have to see Krishna in everything. Like one of the things very much Prabhupada would talk about here in Mayapur, is there are so many nice doors on the building there, in the Lotus building in Mayapur. And there's so much nice wind that is always blowing these doors shut. So the devotees would come in, leave the door open, and then again they would slam shut. And so Prabhupada would just say, just learn this art, how to close the door. Right? You come in, the door is closed, then you again close it. We have this thing, we just walk in, yes, leave the door open. No, but the door was closed. Why was it closed? Must have been closed for a reason. Right? So therefore we come in, it's closed, then we come in, we close the door. And if the door is open, we leave it open. Right? In India they have these little wooden things that turn and hold the door open so they do not bang. So when you open the door, you have to put that. So we must be conscious of what is the surroundings. Then we can become conscious how Krishna is in control of these surroundings. So we can see that in this, then we're going to become conscious of our desires, other people's desires. We're going to be conscious of whatever is going on in the material world. So Krishna is pointing out here, now how do you deal with that? Right? Because up to now, up to becoming, you know, taking up Krishna consciousness, when a desire comes into the mind, then generally, unless it's immediately thrown out, then it's something that you must deal with. It becomes a purpose in life, a goal in life. And then we endeavor to fulfill that desire. But Krishna is pointing out here, as we become more and more Krishna conscious, the desires still keep coming. Just we have no interest in them. So therefore, just as the rivers are flowing into the ocean, we just let those desires flow by. It came into the mind. As it came in, it will go out. Only if you catch it, then it will remain. But if you don't, the mind is very fickle. It doesn't focus on anything. So as something comes in, if you let it go, it will go. But if you catch it, then it's a problem. So here's, one must give up. Yeah, this is explained in the next verse. It says you have to give up the desire for fulfilling desires. So this is something. We have the desire. The problem's not the desire. The problem is wanting to fulfill those desires. Right? Senses means desire. That's their only business. They collect information. They bring in, oh, stomach is hungry, you know, oh, you know, nice breeze is blowing, or it's becoming very hot, we should find some shade. It's just, that's all they're doing all day. They're just bringing in information, and the mind is going through these and deciding what's good, what's not good, you know, how we should deal with it. So we just let them go by. That's all. It's a practice. One has to be conscious of it. They come up in the mind, so many things, very strong, you just let them go by. And if we're not attached to fulfilling them, then they can go by. Therefore, this our process is very different from the yogis. The yogis will come up, take the desire, I don't want this desire, fight with this desire, so many things, and generally we see they do not win. They lose. But we come in from the other angle, is we go to Krishna. Because we want to please Krishna, therefore these desires aren't to be fulfilled, therefore we can let them go by. Because the point is, one has to come to the point of desirelessness on the material platform. That one doesn't desire to fulfill material desires. There's two levels, it's a subtle point. There's the polluted consciousness that the living entity has, that he wants to be the enjoyer. So that is a generic. It's not specific, just I want to enjoy. Now what to enjoy, I don't know, just like somebody decides, ah, tonight let's go out, let's have some fun. Let's go out on the town, but you don't know what to do, you just want to enjoy. Then either yourself you'll think of something, or with friends and they'll say, hey, let's go here, let's go there. Then you focus, okay, let's do this, no we won't do that. So it's two different stages. One is the general thing I want to enjoy. The second is finding something to enjoy. So the mind is just coming up with things to enjoy. So if we give up the idea that we want to enjoy, then the little details that the mind dreams up with what the senses bring in, then we can conquer. So this is the point that's being made here, is that they will go on. It's not that there's some magic, they'll just go away. If Krishna wants, then with time we seek. But we see Yamunacharya in his prayer. It's not saying they went away. He's saying they come into the mind. But when they come into the mind, he has no interest. It's not of interest for him. So that's the devotee, is that stomach gets hungry. It's not that some magic now you don't notice you're hungry, but you don't care. Or it's not that the body may not be tired, but you know you're busy chanting, or you'd rather chant or read, and you don't need to sleep anymore. Like this, so it's not that it's some magic. This is our idea, and personal idea. It's just, they'll go away. Or our yogic idea, we'll just control them. Like this. But no, Krishna takes them away. Because we're interested in Krishna, you forget something else. Just like you're very tired, you want to take some rest, you're about ready to take rest, very, very tired, and then somebody calls on the phone, or somebody comes over, and hey, you know, what about this? And then you spend up talking the next 3 hours. Right? But just before that person came, you were ready to die, you were so tired. Now this person comes, you've forgotten about being tired. Right? So like that, when the mind becomes so absorbed in Krishna, even though the tiredness is there, hunger is there, so many desires are there, who cares? We have something better, right? Just like a small child is eating mud, right? A very nice thing, mud. You can do so many things with mud. You can make it a nice burfis and into cakes. And you can do many things with mud. Very, very good medium, right? But then when you come in contact with something better, some sweets and other things made by the mother, then the mud is not interesting. Mud's still there. Mud doesn't go away. Right? You're 90 years old, the mud's still there. It doesn't go away. But there's no interest. Right? The little kid's interested. So this is a very key point for conquering desires. But in any stage of Krishna consciousness, but especially we see this is the last points that Krishna is giving. Arjuna is asked, what does this Krishna conscious, elevated, liberated person look like? How do they behave? How do they talk, walk? How do they do all these things? So then Krishna is explaining. So this is one of the last keys of how to operate it. Is that desires are there, they don't care. Therefore they're liberated. Liberated stage is not that it won't be there. Otherwise, what's the meaning of tatastha? Tatastha means that one is in between material desire and spiritual desire. That's the meaning of marginal. You can see both. So, the liberated person, even though they see material desire, they don't care if they're Krishna conscious. Then, they're not interested in that, so they go beyond liberation. Because we're not interested. Therefore, Prabhupada points out at the end, in fact, he does not even desire liberation from so-called material bondage. The devotees of Krishna have no material desires, and therefore they are in perfect peace. So, factually, we're not interested in liberation. We're interested in Krishna. Krishna automatically means liberation. Right? But because of so much pain in the material world, therefore Krishna talks about it. He gives the process of jnana. You know, we talk about liberation. Because it is something that will catch the attention of the conditioned soul. That material world is bad, it's a trouble, so therefore I want to get out of this material world. So that's good, we want to get out of here, rather than stay here. That's better. But better than that is, we're not even worried about getting out of here, we're worried about becoming Krishna conscious. Because if we're Krishna conscious, whether we're here, or whether we're in the spiritual realm, it doesn't matter. So we're not specifically interested in liberation. We're interested in pleasing Krishna. Then, by pleasing Krishna, we go back to Godhead. That's the ultimate liberation. Right? Because liberation means Brahman. It's in between. It's neither here nor there. So we have to go beyond this point. Otherwise, we do not perfect. Our natural position is love for Krishna. That's the dormant nature. But unless we go beyond the tatastha platform, the marginal platform, we won't develop that love. We'll get stuck in the Brahman. So that's not a safe place. It's not a secure place. Because the living entity will have desire. Even in Brahman, there's desire. Otherwise, why will one fall? Right? If one is in Brahman, but he's thinking, I am Brahman. Right? So he is enjoying this Brahman. Why is he going to Brahman? I will enjoy being in Brahman. So that enjoying propensity is there. So we want to go beyond that. That we don't want to enjoy the material world. We don't want to enjoy Brahman platform. We just want to serve Krishna. And then Krishna, his enjoyment, that is our pleasure. So it reverses. So this is very key point that the devotee, he has no desires to fulfill because Krishna fulfills his desires. Whatever he needs, he's dependent upon Krishna. And therefore, he does not require anything. And we see Krishna takes care. Therefore, they're peaceful. Whatever comes by Krishna's grace, you know, we perform our duties, our devotional activities, our duties that we are, you know, obliged to perform. But results, we're not worried about. Krishna has mentioned before. So now this is the further point on how to give up those desires, that Krishna is taking care, we just depend upon him. And whatever desires come, we don't worry about them. We just do our service, and then our mind will be peaceful. Any questions or comments? Yes. Your microphone.
When a small child wants to play with something, when he grows, his desires to play are replaced by other desires. So actually, his real desire is in playing all this stuff he was playing before. So when we say that on the way to platform, we still may have healthy desires, mature desires, it seems to me that it's not really that we are Krishna conscious, because we haven't replaced the desire to enjoy by Krishna consciousness. Because if we say that if there is no difference between Krishna consciousness in the material world and the spiritual world, then in spiritual world we don't see much more than that, because they're absent there. So it seems that the material world, in the level of Krishna consciousness, there is no material desire. So we say that material desire is actually maybe for liberation, platform of liberation, but not the platform of Krishna consciousness.
Yes, me. Means material desires end with Krishna consciousness. When we become Krishna conscious, then we give up material desire. Desire is never given up. It's just what the desire is. So material desire, that we don't care about. That goes by. We simply concentrate on spiritual desire. How to please Krishna, how to serve Krishna, how to serve, you know, the order of the spiritual master. You know, the directions that Srila Prabhupada has given us. This is what we're trying to fulfill. That is our desire. So spiritual desire is natural. But it's just what desire? Just like a little kid wants to eat so many things, those desires by adults are given up. But they're replaced by spiritual desire. That's the important thing. So the idea that I will just control the desire or get rid of the desire doesn't actually exist, because desire is the natural function of the living entity. Desire, it means that we are creating a relationship, right? It means that the living entity is Sat-Chit-Ananda. So Sat means existence. Existence means that's the basis of relationships. So desire means as I see myself and something else, and then I have a desire to bring those two together, right? So I'm desiring to create relationship. So you can't get rid of that. So this is the artificial thing, is that the karmis, they try to take a material thing and connect it with the spiritual entity, which is ourself. So that's improper. That's so-called. And then the yogis, I mean the salvationists, they think, I will get rid of all these desires, so they'll only be me. But then that's not sat. They say it's sat, but it's not sat. Because sat means there'll be a relation. They'll say, okay, otherwise they say, I'll go into the Brahman, but then I will go into the Brahman. So there's myself and Brahman. But they're saying it will disappear. There won't be any relationships. So it can't function either. Because sat means relationship. So therefore, that means there will be desire. But now the point is, Krishna consciousness is how to connect ourselves to everything we see in connection to Krishna. So the desire is connected to Krishna. Therefore, material desires on this platform, we just let go. We don't care about. So that's the whole process of sadhana bhakti. Is seeing ourselves in relationship with everything. That verse before, it's not in this book, but that Rupa Goswami said a few verses back in the purport, that whatever is there, it is used in the Lord's service. This Yukta Vairagya. Because the impersonals, just they get rid of it. But they can't get rid of it. Right? But the devotee connects himself. Whatever is there, he sees it in relationship to Krishna. So therefore you have to know what is the dharma of that thing. Right? What is the dharma of a building? What is the dharma of a child or an adult or a leader or a renunciate or a woman or a husband or, you know, like all these things. What is there? What is the dharma of a tree? What is the dharma of ground? Right? So then that is varnashram. And then that explains, okay, with the king you behave like this, with this, because you are you, they are them. What is the relationship? Therefore, you behave like this with them, they behave like this with you. Right? So, even that's not enough, because you have to connect that to Krishna. Right? Is, you know, why Krishna wants it? Why does he want it like that? What is the purpose? What is behind that? Why is it like that? We see, we'll find in the spiritual realm that there's Danda Maharaj, and he runs things, so everybody else follows him. Therefore, here, then you see kings, they run everything, everyone else follows. Right? So, the whole thing has come from Krishna. You start to see, what is the connection to Krishna? If you start to become conscious of everything, you know, everything you're dealing with, you're touching, you're smelling, you're tasting, and then you see, what is Krishna's opinion on this? How should I touch? How should I taste? How should I sit? How should I stand, talk? So then the whole culture of Krishna consciousness manifests in this way. So it's a science. It's not a matter of what's popular, like this. We see with Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and Srila Prabhupada, and they're very strong on this point of vox populi. What is popular, that is not what matters. What matters is what is truth. It's interesting that this battle between what the popular, you know, what the mass says is truth, and what is actual truth, goes back to the roots of Western philosophy. This was the problem with Socrates. Socrates said, there is an absolute truth, and you must bring your life in tune with that absolute truth. And the sophists said, no, what the mass of people say is true, that is truth. So there was one Socrates, and there were many sophists, and the sophists all happened to be the judges and ministers and everyone of the state. So therefore, you know, Socrates, he drank the hemlock and not the sophists. And so that is the philosophy today. What people say today is important, that's what goes. 6 months it changes, right? Like we see in America, you go back, you know, September 10th, right? Then, oh, liberal this, liberal that, oh, the poor this one, poor that one, so many poor, so many, so have to be so careful, this, that. And then September 11th, you know, we have to have some standards here, we have to have some discipline, you know, we have to, you know, punish those who are... One day, from being liberal, who cares about America, to everybody is buying American flags. Everybody. So that's vox populi. It changes moment to moment. Anything can happen, immediately it changes. Who, you know, there's no standard. So the devotee, he becomes Krishna conscious not by vox populi, but by seeing what is Krishna's standard. Krishna is saying what to do, how to behave, how to act. You know, how to act in Krishna pure Krishna consciousness, how to act according to sadhana bhakti, and how to act according to social custom. But in any case, it's Krishna who says how to do it. And if we follow that, then we become conscious, because the other way is not conscious. Because it's not based on truth, it's based on ignorance. It's some opinion. So one may say, like it's said, nowadays people are becoming more aware and this and that, but are they? They're becoming more aware of themselves. But not of others, really. Right? It's not. If you check, they're not really becoming aware of others. Because everyone is fighting to be the victim. Because the victim is the one everybody cares about. Right? So then there's a big fight. I'm the victim. No. I'm the victim here. Like that. You know, it's like that. You know, it's like, what is it? Little Red Riding Hood, she's going along, right? And she's going to her grandmother's house, right? And she's going out, and when she leaves, she's taking all kinds of nice organic, you know, home-cooked things to her grandmother, you know, all very nice, politically correct. And then she's going out, and she's able to, you know, deal with her, you know, budding womanhood and all that. She is not dependent upon anyone else. So she's going out alone to her grandmother's house. And then on the way, she picks some flowers and all that, and then she goes to the you know, grandmother's house, and then she comes, and you know, we know the story. Then the big bad wolf has already swallowed up, you know, grandmother. And then when Little Red Riding Hood comes, then she starts talking, you know, how her nose is big and how her eyes is big and her teeth are big. And then suddenly at that time, then the wolf opens the mouth and then goes to devour. She sees grandmother inside. And that, and then suddenly, just as this whole thing starts to break out, the woodchopper who is in the forest, then he comes in, and in the fight, he cuts off Little Red Riding Hood's head. And then there's a whole fight that, you know, the wolf is saying, yes, this nasty girl's coming in, saying so many things, you know, talking about my nose, and talking about, you know, she doesn't know how to behave. And then the axeman is saying, no, I'm the victim here, I couldn't handle it. The pain I was feeling because she was picking very rare protected flowers. You know, how could she, you know, be so inconsiderate? So each one is fighting over who is the victim. So this is the modern idea, is that each one is thinking, this is a, how do you say? This is from a book on politically correct bedtime stories. This is not the original. So the difficulty comes is that people are wanting is that the sensitivity must be there. That's the idea. People must be sensitive. But the problem is then there's a fight over who you're supposed to be sensitive about. Everybody should be sensitive about me. And no, this one should be, we should be sensitive about that one. And then tomorrow goes. But the Vedic thing is we must be sensitive to ourselves and to everyone else. And everybody else should be sensitive to who they are and to who everybody else is. Then everybody's sensitive to who they are for self-realization and their position in society and everybody else's. So then then everyone can be sensitive. So because there's a standard, God sets the standard, then we can see our life in connection with that standard, see everyone else's life in connection with that standard, and then it makes things peaceful. So that's the the whole idea is that one becomes conscious of who one is and what is one's surroundings. Then what is my relationship with those surroundings? How am I supposed to deal with those surroundings? You know, surroundings means people, things, places, time, all this. Then we can actually progress nicely. Like that. Of course, if someone can just skip all that and just become fully Krishna conscious on the spot, that's the best. Krishna recommends that. Why waste your time? You just surrender immediately. If you can't do that, follow sadhana bhakti. Because in sadhana bhakti, then you become aware of various rules and regulations that control the life, that you can become aware of what's going on. And if that you can't follow, then you work for him. Right? We bring in all the different, according to your conditioned nature, engaging that in Krishna's service. That's varnashram. So then we can engage in his service. And we can start to learn all the different social situations, this, that, interactions with people and family and, you know, society. But according to what God says, then we become conscious. And then from there, then we are not so worried about these things for ourselves. Then sadhana becomes more important. Then eventually we fold that back up until we are just interested in pleasing Krishna. We are just focused on Krishna. So it means at the point of liberation, then we can take advantage of that one. But up to liberation, then the sadhana bhakti and all these other aspects then are important. Does that make any sense? Yeah. Yes? No?
I was asking. I'm sorry. I just a little bit off. I mean, have desires, material desires, encounter them, does it mean we are not really Krishna conscious?
Now you said what you wanted. No, it means we counter with Krishna consciousness. Later there's a verse Krishna said, with the sword of knowledge, then you should slash all these material desires. Like that. So it's our business to try to counter them, but we're countering them with Krishna consciousness. We're going to counter them with nothing. You know, what are you going to counter them with? A desire comes up, how do you decide it's good or not good? Right? So we can look at it from, okay, it's good because it's good for the senses, right? If it feels good, do it. Okay, so then, but then that's animal life. If we take it to the next step, well, what is good? If I do this, I'll get pious credit, and I will then become prosperous. I don't do it, then I will, you know, I will go to hell. Okay, so that's not good, right? Or do we counter it with, if I have these kind of desires, I won't get liberated? And this material world, I've tried so many times, I'm not happy, so therefore let me give these up. Or we're countering with, Krishna doesn't like this. So therefore we become Krishna conscious. So our process is the same, but the difference is the goal. Our goal is not to get rid of material desire. Our goal is to become Krishna conscious. So therefore, we don't bother with the desire. The yogi has, and the yogis and the salvations, they must get rid of the desire. Right? The pious person must get rid of the desire. But the devotee doesn't have to get rid of the desire. He just neglects it. So that's how we counter it. We just don't care for it. Does that make sense? Yes.
Yes. Quandary has come up. I understand it. The mind, the uncontrolled mind, basically capitulating to the demand of the senses without exercising much discernment or discrimination, I think is at the root of a lot of the problems in just mainstream society, when really the converse of that should be true. The sensory input should be there, but the mind should be exercising discernment as to whether the information that it's processing is a benefit to the individual in terms of their spiritual advancement.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The other point, I'd just like to say that this... I don't really know if I'm correct in what I just stated or not, but this is just what's coming to mind. But the other point I wanted to make was this process of becoming desirelessness. Is this not in and of itself a desire?
Yes, you could say like that. Yes, so the first point is that's basically that's the choice. Is the mind is going to accept and reject, that will not get rid of. So it's a matter of discriminating at what level we will accept and reject. So if our acceptance and rejection is based on the platform of spiritual improvement and upliftment, that means in most all desires that comes by, we just let them go by because they're not worth it. And those that are worthwhile, we take. But otherwise, we don't. So it's that discern. But the main discerning is coming is in the intelligence. Because the mind takes something or rejects something. That's its function. While the intelligent discerns between good and bad. Then the mind may take its good or bad. Just like, give example. Like someone knows, he with intelligence knows smoking is bad. But his mind says, I will smoke.
Krishna did say that the mind can be the best of friends or the worst of enemies.
Yes. Yeah, so when the mind is accepting things based on Krishna, it's the best friend. Because then it's attached to Krishna. Because the mind means attachment. That's the thing. It desires, then attached. Then becomes attached. Then it depends upon the senses to get the work done. So if it becomes attracted to and attached to Krishna conscious things, then the senses are always engaged in Krishna conscious activities. So then that, your first, that's, your first statement was correct. Means Krishna can always help. We see later that Krishna brings out very much the point in the fourth chapter and also in the tenth chapter that he within the heart, he takes away the desires, you know, material desires that are bothering, the disturbances of the sincere or the truthful devotee. This is also mentioned in the second chapter of the Bhagavatam. As someone who's truthful, then Krishna takes these away. So truthful means they want them to go away. It's not that they won't be there, because Krishna is pointing out here, desires will be there. So the problem is not the desire, the problem is the desire for the desires. You know, because one can see, someone is discriminating, one can see the lower desires, one can see the higher desires. He knows you should take the higher desires, but there's still the desire to enjoy those lower desires. So that's what has to be given up. So if one is fixed in one tries to fix oneself in devotional service, gets absorbed in devotional service, then Krishna says, then this knowledge will manifest within the heart. Because Krishna, so therefore, does that make sense? In other words, that person who's hopeless, then what they should do is absorb themselves in devotional activities. Right? That's, if someone's not ready, then what can you do? You can try to point it out for them, but you know, you try to, how you say, don't alienate them, try to help them, so that at some point they'll figure it out, like that. But see, if someone doesn't want, it's very difficult. See, you have to bring them to the point that they're conscious of the situation and they want, though they may be helpless to do anything about it. Because they may be, like here, it says in the, so two times Krishna's mentioned already here about the, if the mind focuses on one sense, it can get carried away. Like that. He mentions it twice in the last, like, 10 verses. So then we have to want to go beyond that. So when that comes, then Krishna can fulfill the desire. If we turn to Krishna, then he can fulfill that desire. But until we turn to Krishna and until we desire it, how anything will happen? Things happen in the spiritual material world, in the whole cosmic creation, based on desire. Spiritual world, they want to please Krishna. They have that desire. Then activities happen. Material world, we want to enjoy or control or do something here. Then there's activity. So there must be desire. And Krishna says, when you turn to him, then he will then help us. He will turn to us. So we don't turn to him, then how he will help? Right? He'll only help us if we want to be helped. He doesn't want to get in the way of our independence. Right? So the person needs to feel they need to progress, and that Krishna is the answer, not something else. It won't be their own determination or some, you know, kind of new philosophy or, you know, kind of sentiment or psychology or, you know, some other process. But that Krishna is the answer. Then with that combination, then if they engage in service, right? Even though it may be faulty and so many problems, they just engage with that sincere desire to please Krishna. That's a truthful devotee. Then Krishna will help them and they will cross over this. Does that make sense?
Yes. I just would like to tell something which Bhaktivedanta Maharaj was explaining very nicely in Puna camp, that Krishna really loves us in every situation, and that trust, love and trust is built up when you feel yourself appreciated by someone. and I sometimes forget that Krishna really loves and appreciates me, and whatever little endeavor I do. So persons become not open because of this forgetfulness. Mm,
yeah, that's a good point. Very good point. Very good point. Here, over here. First here, we'll come back.
I was wondering, Maharaj, because of our conditioning that we have, it is our nature to exhibit some offensive behavior at some points. You know, and I was wondering what constitutes an offense to especially another devotee, and how we overcome the offense.
So this tendency towards offense is basically comes up because of this anger. Anger, then we will act in a rash way. So anger comes after frustration. So when there is some desire, then when that's frustrated, then we become angry. So it may be due to something, you know, that was dear to us in the way of some sense gratification or control. Either of these, some way, you know, attachment, envy, anger, all these things come up. So even though it may be the person is wrong, maybe, but we have a desire to control things in a certain way, then it's not going the way we want it, we become angry. This is material anger. We're not talking spiritual anger. It's not going the way Krishna wants it. But material anger, it's not going the way we want it. You know, we're in control of it, or let's say we know we're the teacher, we know the philosophy, we're something. And it's not going the way we want, we become angry. And in this way we may behave not in the way we should. Right? So we have to be able to come to the point is that it's not the way Krishna wants it. So therefore it's wrong. It must be dealt with. The solution is not, I give up control, therefore you just let everyone do what they want and why I should get involved. No, that's what Arjuna is professing here. Is all these men are crazy, they're doing what they want, why I should get involved, why I should have desire, I should give this up. Okay, I'm nonsense, yes. But what they're doing is also nonsense, right? They're not supposed to behave like this, otherwise why there's going to be a religious war? Right? This is not just a mundane war, a religious war. So they're wrong. So now how do you balance this? Is that I can't get angry because I'm not in control of the situation or something that I desire is being thwarted. But it's wrong because Krishna doesn't like it done in this way. Either spoken in this way, the philosophy, the activity, the desire, the mentality. Something's wrong, not according to Krishna's standard. And now, what's Krishna's desire? The Krishna's desire is everybody becomes Krishna conscious. Therefore, then we see what is the best way to deal with that person that they will be able to accept Krishna's standard. Or if they can't accept Krishna's standard, at least how to deal with the situation that others who could accept Krishna's standard won't be disturbed by Krishna. Like that. So therefore, it may still appear to be that one is dealing in an angry way or a very strong way. Or it could be that this person needs to be dealt with very gently in this and explain to them because they don't understand. And you explain it nicely, they will understand. You know? Or it may be that you have to deal strongly with them and then they, oh, okay. As we see, someone is very stubborn, you say things very in a sharp way, then immediately, okay. Like if you're in, how do you say? Like if you're in New York, you walk down the street, comes up and says something to you. If you come back very quickly with a one-liner that cuts them off, then immediately you're best of friends. Right? Because, you know, they think, oh, this guy is smart. Okay, you know, we have something here. Right? So sometimes the living entities are like that. So therefore it's not that dealings will always just be very gentle and very sentimental. No, that sometimes is how you have to do it. Other times you have to be strict. Here, Krishna is being strict with Arjuna. He's saying, you're a fool. Talking all this nice religious stuff, you don't know what you're talking about. Right? So he's strict with him. And we would see, Prabhupada would give this example, thunderbolt and rose. No one was more wonderful and caring than him. And other times when the thunderbolt was there, you talk to any devotee who's risen from Prabhupada. It's like the universe is desolate. Prabhupada looks at you, right through you. I mean, it's just like everything's devastated. At the same time, if he's kind, no one is more kind. Like that. So you would see in his conversations, his dealings, it seems to be contradictory. Why sometimes Swamiji is sort of... No, that's external. The real thing is what is best for that individual's Krishna consciousness at this moment in their mentality. So therefore, then the dealings, to see like that. So the main thing is as if we are dealing with the person according to our own perspective. Then offenses may be there. But if we deal according to Krishna's, then we can avoid those offenses. Is that okay?
Or if we do offend somebody, is there some...
Yeah. Yeah, so the question is, if we do offend somebody, then what we should do. So the recommendation is that the best is that we can go to that person and beg forgiveness. That's the best. You know, go, sit, nicely discuss. And if that won't work, you know, through somebody else, or if nothing else, then we sit down and in a very humble way absorb ourselves in chanting and service, like that. If the other person either won't accept our you know, apology, or they're not available for that apology, you know, or if we're not able to bring us ourselves to do that, but then we have to take full shelter of the holy name, and then slowly it will go away. Well, if we can go and apologize and deal properly, immediately it goes away. It's gone that moment. Otherwise, it's a slow process to do it by the other, but it can be done. Is that okay? No, here. I think you have to do straight.
Straight up.
Yeah.
Narayan
Shri.
Ah,
there you go.
Are you? He is neglecting desires. My experience has been that most of the time, the same desires keep coming. Simply neglecting doesn't seem to be a very strong platform to be on. It says here, Shishanti Atma in a Kama Kami, that's really related to, because it seems like peaceful platform, we feel comfortable. Fulfilling desire, a state of unfulfillment, how can it be to peace?
Uh-huh. Means we have to see is if the desire is something that can be engaged in Krishna consciousness. Right? Let's say someone has the desire, you know, for interactions, the pleasant interactions of household life and the duties and those dependencies that is there. So if that can be, one is in that position, one can fulfill that, those desires according to a proper Krishna conscious way, one can engage them. It makes the mind peaceful because it got what it wants, but it's never satisfied. This is the point, you can't satisfy it. Right? It's not possible because it has unlimited desire. Right? It's just like a little kid, they want to eat. You give them something, as soon as you give them, then they want more. They haven't even eaten what they got. Right? Or they put it in their mouth, I want another one. Right? They give them another one, I want another one. And you'll never satisfy it. Like that. Otherwise, then it'll give up this one, it'll take another one. So it's the same thing. So whether it's this house, or this car, or that car, cloth, or that cloth, it's the same thing. So one can engage it in direct according to Krishna and purify it. Then one comes to the platform of knowledge where there's knowledge in detachment, and one then can ignore it. That's the meaning of vanaprastha. Vanaprastha, many desires are there. Like the person has been there, you know, for the last 20, 30 years, has been working ways to generate economic development, right? To maintain the family in some way or another. And they have had so many things to be desirable, right? For how, you need a house, you need furniture, you need this, that. So many things are required, right? So you're constantly on the outlook. What's nice, what is available, what's new, you know, what can I get? And for 30 years, you've been engaging that in Krishna's service. But by being purified, after a while, you notice 30 years have gone by, we've gotten what we wanted, and we're still not happy. So therefore, now when the mind sees, oh, hey, that's nice, or this, then we don't care. Oh, who cares? What are you going to do with it? Now we're old, now it's business. Let's sit down, let's chant, let's study, let's do something for Krishna. Right? So then you just let them go. So the idea is if they can be purified, we engage them if we need to. If they're nonsense, those have to be just left. And you have to come to what's the closest Krishna conscious thing to that and need that. And then with time, then that knowledge and detachment will come to give up those desires. Then it's just they flow by. So it's not a neglect, meaning in relationship to this verse. Neglect means there's a point that one comes to, because this is at the end. This is talking about the person who is basically on the verge of, or on the platform of liberation. Next verse then will give even more exact details of what that means. What that means, let them go. It will tell, like, basically four different aspects of what that means to let it go. So then this is there. But before that, then you have the sacrifice of, you know, what the brahmachari does. You know, he just gives up sense gratification, just focus on study. The grihastha engages the senses and the sense objects according to Krishna's desire. Then the vanaprastha then takes up austerities and, you know, like that to get rid of those things. Just simplify their life and give these things up. And then sannyas means that one is not supposed to be endeavoring in Krishna. One is supposed to be just letting them go by. So at any stage when one can do this, best. Earlier the better. But it has to be natural. Right? That's why Krishna before this is making the point of engaging one's desires and nature in his service. That's the whole thing. You take whatever it is you need, do it for Krishna. That will purify it. Right? Then you come to the point where there's nothing to fulfill. Krishna will take care of all your desires. You have nothing to fulfill. Right? Like the python sadhu, he's lying on the side of the road, doing nothing. He's fat. So according to his previous karma, he's supposed to be fat, so even though he lays on the side of the road, does nothing, he'll get fat, right? But because he's not engaging himself in any activities, he's not being a lazy bum. He's just detaching himself, therefore there's no next birth. So he doesn't have to worry that he's doing nothing now, so there'll be prosperity in the future. No, he's doing nothing now for the purpose of there is no material future. So like that, we see that Krishna is going through the different stages here of what is... We should probably end here, otherwise it gets late. Srila Prabhupada, Samavita Bhaktivrindhi, Jayanitai Gaura Prema Rani.